Okay, so it's that time of year as we are gearing up for Truma Tetzave Vayako Pekude. So for many of us, in a certain respect, this is, yeah, let's call it that. You know, we have to try to figure out how do we find some meaning in this story, because we've gone through the Mishkan a million times, and very often it's hard to relate because the details are very intricate, but more than that, the whole notion of a mikdash and a mizbeach, these are very foreign to us. You're talking about 2,000 years that, unfortunately, lo aleinu, we haven't had it. So how do we get ourselves focused to appreciate what we're going to be learning and experiencing? Because you can see it as an opportunity to tap into something which we don't appreciate a whole year. That's really the way we can look at it, especially because, you know, the idea of the calendar and the Seder of the Parashios is that different times over the course of the year, we focus in on specific aspects of our Avodas Hashem. And I think it's not coincidental that the Torah is eternal and the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us every year at this time of year to come back to this theme. So we have to figure out, how does this theme speak to us? What does it mean for us after 2,000 years of Gullus? You know, thank God now we're finally at the end of such a long, terrible Gullus. We're transitioning into Geula. You know, you have a state of Israel, you have a Jewish country, you have a Jewish army. So we're the Reishis Smichas Geulah Seinu. We're getting there, but we're not at the full Geula, which is really the Beis HaMikdash. So it's an opportunity for us to tap into it and to realize that perhaps, maybe on some deep spiritual level, there's an added siyata d'shmaya, that if we can find a way to create that connection, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can help us deepen that appreciation. So I want to think about it on two levels. And the first place to start, of course, is what the Torah describes is exactly what the goal is, which we know from what you have in front of you on page number one. The pasuk tells us right in the beginning of the parsha, "Va'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'socham." So, what does that mean? So, what does Rashi say? I'm going to pick up the Rashi. Just get my
look. V'asuli l'shmi beis kedusha. Make me a holy house.
Exactly, which at that time meant an ohel, but once they ultimately settled in Yerushalayim, that meant that the Ohel, the temporary structure which existed before in Shiloh, was going to be transformed into a bayis, into a house. And this mitzvah is not just, strictly speaking, one of the Tariag mitzvos. There's something very profound here. The idea of that we can create, and we'll come back to this at the end, we can create a space for God in this world is a very unusual idea. But even this phrase, Va'asu Lushmi Beis Kedusha, it has an interesting ring to it, because it doesn't say Va'asu Li Beis HaMikdash, which is the, strictly speaking, the mitzvah, but there is an element here of a Beis Kedusha, of a house of holiness. We have to create a sacred space, a space that is designated for the presence of Hashem. Well, where do we do that today? That's right. And that is a din. So where does that come from? How do you know what is the source that our Beis HaKnesses has some kind of Kedusha that is similar to Kedusha's Mikdash? So it actually comes from, let's look at page 2, it actually comes from a Pasuk in Yechezkel. So the context of this Pasuk is not very pleasant. It's actually extremely harsh. It describes how the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to throw us out of Israel, and it's going to be terrible, and we're going to be cast away. You know, Yechezkel is a prophet of exile. But what does the Ribbono Shel Olam tell us? In Pasuk Tzayin, he says, look, nonetheless, you should know, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, Ki Hirchaktim Bagoyim. Yes, when I throw them out and I send them out, v'chi hafitzosim bo'aratzos, nonetheless, vo'ehi lahem l'mikdash ma'at bo'aratzos, sham, I'll be for them a little mikdash. Don't think that just because we're far away from Israel, we're far away from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, that we're totally cast off from HaKodesh Baruch Hu. No. I will be for them like a little mikdash. So what is a mikdash ma'at? So if you see, look at what does Rashi say here. He quotes from the Targum, mikdash ma'at lebote kinishta. De'inun yasvin tanyan lebeis mikdasha. They are the secondary, they are the stand-in for the Beis HaMikdash. And that's, if you look on the bottom in the Malbim, you see what is called the Mari Yecheskel. That's the Malbim's commentary. The Malbim lived in the 19th century in Germany. The Malbim writes, he says, She'ashre shchinasi besocham gam shama. Don't think that God only lives in the land of Israel and that when we leave Israel, our relationship is over. That's not true. Hashem says he'll still be with us. He's going to create a space. That space is a Mikdash Ma'at. And this is the source from the Gemara Megillah, which says that a Mikdash Ma'at is a Beis HaKnesses. So what does that mean practically? It means a very specific set of rules. So take a look on page 3. So Shulchan Aruch tells us, this is in Or HaChaim, it's in Kuf Nun Aleph. What are the rules? This is Simon of Dinei Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. Beis HaKnesses, which is, here you have Bote Knesios. Bote Knesios, Bote Midrashos. What are the rules? Number one, Ein Noagin Bahan Kalas Rosh. A person should not be frivolous in a Beis HaKnesses. Now the truth is that I actually think, when as I was preparing this show, I was, you know what? It's actually a good thing to chazer, because one of the nice things, beautiful things that we have in our communities, that we have many Bate Knesios, many shuls, and we come to shul all the time. We're there 3 times a day, so we're very comfortable in shul. So we're schmoozing and we're talking, but it's worth...
That's why we don't show the spiel in the shul. We've actually messed around with that a couple of times. Seating would be...
would be much better, but it's Kalos Rosh. So the truth is, here's an interesting...
Especially
you have the best spiel. There's even a Zohar. The Zohar HaKadosh writes in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Truma, he writes something very sharp, which when I went back to it this week, I'm like, you know what? I'm not careful about this, and I really should be more careful. The Zohar HaKadosh says that it's not proper for a person to speak Divrei Chol. Divrei Chol should not be spoken in the sanctuary. It doesn't mean in the hallway. It is in the sanctuary. It means we shouldn't talk about sports. We shouldn't talk about the menu. We shouldn't talk about Divrei Chol. And he's very, very harsh language. And what's interesting is, I was listening recently to a shir from Rav Shechter who said the following application. We'll go back to Shulchan Aruch in a second, but listen to this ma'isa. Rav Shechter said, we have this din of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, and that extends to the whole shul. Let's say you were to put up a mechitza halfway, imagine KJ at the bima, you put up a mechitza, and you're going to say, we're going to do something in the back half of the shul, we'll show the spiel in the back half of the shul, we'll do a card game in the back of the shul. It doesn't work. The whole shul has Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. So he suggested the following. He says, we know that the whole shul has Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, whereas, let's say, for some reason, I don't know if this has ever happened, for some reason they're doing construction in the shul, and one time they're cleaning the carpets, like sometimes happens before Yom Kippur, they're cleaning the carpets, you have to daven in the social hall. So the social hall, just because you daven in the social hall once, doesn't mean it has Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. It's Ba'akroi Ba'alma. In the days of the Gemara, in Maseches Tanis, the Mishnah describes that they would, on fast days, they would sometimes daven in the street. They would take the Aron Kodesh out to the street. They would put ashes, dirt on the top of the Aron to signify the mourning. Everybody would put ashes on their head. They would daven in the street. But the street doesn't have Kedusha. It was an occasional... Oh. So... There would be a difference then between the lobby of the shul, the social hall, and the sanctuary of the shul. So Shechter said the following ha'ara. He said, think about the Kotel. The Kotel has the din of a Beis HaKnesses. People daven there at Ba'ofen Kavua. That's probably one of the reasons why they have Hadlakas HaMenorah at the Kotel. Right, there's a big shiloh about whether you do Hadlakas HaMenorah in public places. But for many years, I've seen pictures, and Nechama's grandmother, she should live me well, she was describing to us, she was in Yerushalayim, they were in Israel, she was in Israel with some of their family for Hanukkah, and she could not get over. She said the cab driver wouldn't take them to the Kotel. There were tens of thousands of people at the Kotel for the last night of Hanukkah. I didn't realize it was such a thing. said they had to take a bus. They had to wait 7 buses to get into a bus, 90-year-old lady, to get to the Kotel. She said it was amazing. People were singing, dancing. It was a huge thing for Hanukkah lift. So the reason they light candles at the Kotel probably is because it's Din of a Beis HaKnesses. So Shachter had the following chiddush. He said, what about Rachavat HaKotel in the back? So he said, on an average Friday night, nobody davens in the back. But on Yom Yerushalayim, people daven in the back. It's so packed. You go, if, right? Birchas Kohanim, Chol HaMoed, for sure, people way in the back. Tisha B'Av. So Rav Shechter had the following chiddush. He thought that just like the Kotel has the din of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, the first section, he says there's not really much of a divider. There is a divider, but he thinks it's not very substantive. So he suggests, he thinks that the whole Kotel Plaza, the back Rachavat HaKotel, also has a din of a Beis HaKnesses. Memele, he thinks that all of the halachos that apply for Kedushas Beis HaKnesses also should apply in the back section of the Rachavat HaKotel. It's a big chiddush. But he says it follows. He says you don't treat the back of the Kotel like the social hall, because he says it's one enormous Beis HaKnesses. Because he says there are times during the year that people come ba'ofen kavua to daven in the back. So he says even when you're in the back of the Kotel Plaza, it should be makbid to have the proper, the same decorum, the same focus that we have inside the Beis HaKnesses.
And you can argue that Or Torah on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when they open up the...
I was wondering the same thing. Sad. Unless they make that Al Tanai, maybe, I don't know. But I was wondering the same thing. And Rav Shechter did mention that if you have a partition in the shul, that would not diminish the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. So I was wondering about the same thing. Because there are a lot of places like that, or Torah is one, but there are many shuls where they just have a partition for certain things. But for now, let's say for a bar mitzvah, they take out the front, they have two partitions, they take out the front partition, they put in extra chairs. So then that would mean the hallway also has Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. So we don't think about it that way, but if we realize that these are spaces that are designated for the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we treat them in a different way. Right? So what's the din? Ein noagim behem kalus rosh, kagon schok vehito, like fooling around, silliness. Number 4, sicha betela, no idle chatter. Even sicha schulin, which is for, the Mishnah Berurah says, even sicha schulin for parnasa. You know, you have to make a business deal, so it's important to make a business deal, but not in the sanctuary, in the hallway. Ein ochlin v'shosim behem. So this is a bigger discussion about eating in the shul. So most of the shuls that we have today, they're built in Chutz La'aretz and they're made on a condition. They're built on a Tanai that you can eat in the shul. But I don't know, do they allow eating in the shul?
So Beis Chaim David does.
Right, Beis Chaim David is all Tanai. So they have...
Yeah.
But I don't know.
There's a Tanai.
There is. When they built the shul, they made a Tanai. They made a Tanai. But I don't know if they allow... I don't know if I...
We don't. President, do anything. You built the shul.
Just kidding.
Should find out.
A lot of water bottles.
Generally speaking, in Chutz La'aretz, they make a Beis HaKnesses al Tanai.
You have a separate.
Generally speaking, when people build a Beis HaKnesses, they build an al Tanai. But what's the root of all of these halachos? Where does it come from? So go back to page 3 on the bottom. So the Mishnah Berurah says, I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's what we said. Kihem Nikroim, last line, all the way at the bottom. Kihem Nikroim Mikdash Ma'at. They're called a small base Mikdash. Tichsev Vo'ei Lahem Mikdash Ma'at, the passage we quote in Yechezkel. Uba Mikdash Ksiv Ve'es Mikdash Yitiro. You should fear, you should have awe in the place of the base of Mikdash. So we have this Bezman Hazeh. There's an interesting discussion, there's a debate in Achronim about spitting.
Whether or not you're allowed to spit.
Yes.
The old shuls had that spittoon.
Yes. So there was a debate among Achronim about this question about the spittoons. Now there's another shtickel Torah, and that is the Chabad Minig. So just, if I have to tell you the truth, if this grosses you out, it's your where you daven is. So. But when they say in Aleinu, Shehem Ishtachman Lahevel Varik, sounds like rake, roke, so they spit on the floor in the Beis Medrash, where we learn every day, Baruch Hashem, We use the Academy based Medrash. Every year, there's one or two Chabad boys, and they're always spitting him on the slate. Whoever sits near them, that's what it is. That's what you signed up for. But leaving that aside, this was a question, because people used to have in their living rooms spittoons. So if you were living in America in the 1830s, you would have a spittoon in your house, you would have a spittoon in the Beis HaKnesses. But today, Lechora, if I... Mari, would you be okay if I just spat in the living room? Probably not. No?
I actually probably would be.
Okay, fine. She's got a little voice now. So Rav Schechter once said to us, he said, following Cheshbon based on this, he said, what about going and it's an afkamina now in the wintertime? I'm not going to pass the shayla for anybody, but I'm just pointing out, it's interesting ha'ara. He said, if you have a din of mikdashi tiro, and you have to treat the Beis HaKnesses with special respect, he said, what about going into shul wearing boots? So he says, if you wouldn't walk into your living room with the muddy boots that you're wearing now, you shouldn't walk into shul.
But wouldn't let anybody wear any shoes in your living room.
So then whatever would be, I guess, a reasonable standard for, you know, I don't know if anybody would not allow dirty shoes or clean shoes. You're right. I think they're probably...
There are some gray right, area.
Like no shoes.
People take off their shoes right before they come into the house.
Sure. That's interesting.
Shoes put that special carpeting and all.
Right. So they have commercial grade carpeting, but...
I think some degree.
Some degree of wear and tear. But sometimes you have people who come in with muddy boots.
Yeah.
So if Shakti points out, you wouldn't walk into your living room with muddy boots. You would either wipe them off. I have...
To everyone's defense, no one comes in with muddy boots. It could good. Be with a little snow.
A little snow, okay. Yeah, so you're probably going to then.
You know, and it dries.
Although I'm not, no product. Product, please.
Right.
And
also,
right,
you know.
Right, during the week, somebody could come in with
the climate for that. I mean,
right.
It's a darker expense.
So I'm not getting a cut from this, but I will tell you that many years ago when we moved, probably the second or third year that we lived here, Nechama bought me these things called overshoes. They're unbelievable. You wear regular shoes, and I put on they're like boots on top of the shoes.
And Gary Schreiber.
They're genius.
They're awesome, right? I never saw them before we moved here.
No, but they're like a special brand. Like they're
Neos.
Yes.
Neos.
Yes. But it just goes over.
It just goes.
It gives you no warmth.
No, but it goes up till here. It goes up till here. Mm-hmm. And then you just take them off and you go right in.
And you have your nice shoes.
And you have your proper shoes on. So I find it super helpful because in general, that boots is not, you know, it's too clunky, whatever. It's not good for me. So I have these things. I put them on right on top of the shoes. You take them off and you go right in. So it solves all the problems. But the point is, the whole point of this whole din in Shulchan Aruch is to remind us, and that's the point of talking about it this time of year, is to recognize what a Beis HaKnesses is and what it means to have a dedicated space which is specifically for that meditation, that presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. And because we take it for granted, because we get used to it, so then sometimes we need to make some tikkunim on this. So it's good to remember that the purpose of our Beis HaKnesses is to be a mini Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes we wonder in our mind, how could it be that Chazal described that people didn't have such respect for the Beis HaMikdash, that they didn't treat it with the kind of awe and reverence that we would imagine? But I can imagine also that if, God forbid, lo aleinu, if there were no shuls, and somebody would come in 500 years and say, I can't believe people talked in shul, and they were bringing brown paper bags, and their talisim, and who knows what was going on in the shul, and all kinds of things they could never imagine. So we have it good. We have it good. I mean, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so that we don't have it good. But we have it good that we have beautiful shuls to daven in and to spend time with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to respect them. We have to create that Mikdash Ma'at. So that's one thing I think it's kedai to come back to every year, is to realize the gift of a Beis HaKnesses, that sacred space that comes with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one half of the equation. But then there's another half of the equation, which is not limited to Beis HaKnesses. So let's look at this Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. Let's change directions for a moment to something different. A totally different dimension. In addition, not taking away from the practical beauty and importance of the sacred space of the Beis HaKnesses itself, the Kedushas Makom itself. The Gemara in Shabbos, in the first parak and in the 11th parak, has an extensive discussion of a malacha called Hotza'ah. So what is Hotza'ah? Carrying. So a person only violates Hotza'ah if they pick up an object in a Rishus HaYachid and move it out to a Rishus HaRabim, or vice versa. They pick it up from the area, place in Rishus HaRabim, and they move it into Rishus HaYachid. That is Hotza'ah. That's carrying out. There's a secondary prohibition of taking something for Amos and Rishus HaRabim in Rishus HaRabim, but let's focus on the in to the out. So there's a lot of discussion about this in these two Prakim Masechah Shabbos. What are the details of Melechus Hotza'ah? Today, we have a beautiful Erev, so that's not as common, but people grew up, I suspect people in this room grew up without an Erev. I grew up with an Erev, so for me it's not so common, but there are people who grew up with that. You had an Erev growing up?
Maybe I was 15 years old.
Okay.
But here
didn't have an Erev.
Yeah.
When you grew up, you didn't have
an Erev. All my kids.
You didn't have an Erev.
Here in Chicago.
No.
Yeah.
So that's a recent
it's
thing.
Recent.
So
all my kids had a walk.
I know it's 97.
Really?
Little kids. Okay. So that din is that you can't carry something from one rishus into another rishus, and the din d'rabbanan is that even though, let's say, Central Park or St. Louis or Drake, these are not rishus harabim d'oraisa, they're not enormous thoroughfares, but Shlomo HaMelech made a special takana that I can't carry from my Rishus HaYachid to your Rishus HaYachid. Even though they're two Rishus HaYachids, that's the Din D'Rabbanan, and that's why you need to make an Eruv. An Eruv says, oh, we're all like one Rishus. We're all one big family. So now we have an Eruv, Baruch Hashem, that is contiguous from all the way from the bottom of the Eruv in Peterson Park, which is somewhere near Northeastern University, all the way up to golf. It's all one gigantic area.
It's all connected now.
You can walk to Skokie and carry. We're all in one. Exactly. We're all one area. We're all living together. Okay. One thing that we don't always think about is that there is a detail of this malacha of Hotza'ah, which is that you require an action, a specific akira to pick something up, and a hanacha to put it down. So the Mishnah talks about cases where you have a poor person who's standing outside in the Rishus HaRabim, and he comes to the door of somebody of means. So the Mishnah talks about the Ani sticks his hand inside, and the Balabais puts a piece of bread in his hand, and he carries it out, or vice versa. He has a basket, he puts the basket inside, and all the permutations of back and forth. And that's how you clarify the cases of Hotza'ah. It's called Yitzias HaShabbos. Fine. The Gemara says, I don't really understand one thing, though. When you do an akira and a hanacha, you have to have a makom. It has to be in a place. And the minimum shear, the smallest amount of what is considered to be a place, a makom, is 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. So how big is the tefach? About this big. So 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim, that is the shear. So the Gemara has a question here on page 5. The Gemara, right in the beginning of Shabbos and Daf Dalet, says, wait a minute. V'ha be'inan akir v'hanacha me'al gabi makom, dalet al dalet, v'leika. I don't understand. Take out your hand for a second, Michael. This hand, it's one tefach long, let's say, or it's maybe a little longer than a tefach. Maybe it's a tefach wide. So one person puts something in the hand. There's no makom. That's not qualifying neither for an akira, if I were to pick it out of your hand, nor for anacha, if I'm putting it in your hand. So Gemara says, how could you violate Shabbos in the cases where there's the poor person and the wealthy person? There's no makom. You need an akira and anacha from a makom. And Tosfos on the bottom, you see where the little underline is at the second arrow. Tosfos says, Ve'ein makom chashev pachas midalid. You don't have a makom, you don't have a meaningful place unless it's 4 by 4. 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. That's the minimum.
I mean, really? I mean, obviously the hand is in the house or in a larger place.
Right, but it's not on the larger place.
Okay, this is not, you know.
Okay.
I think you're splitting hairs.
Good, so we are splitting hairs. Good, so let's drill down. So you could argue the person who picked it up off the floor, they did the akira, but then when they put it in my hand, that's a transition point. That's a stop. And then you move it to the next person. So let's say theoretically I was in Rishus HaYachid. I picked it up and I put it on a little cart. This cart is probably Dalet al Dalet. We can measure it. And then somebody else picked it up and took it out to Rishus HaRabim. Neither of us is liable, min HaTorah. Because we didn't do an Akira of Rishus HaYachid and a Hanach of Rishus HaRabim. You got to do the whole story, A to Z. So the Gemara says, you know what? Yodo Shel Adam, a person's hands, that's Choshev like Dalet al Dalet. It's an interesting idea. There's an element that your hand, even though it doesn't have the actual size of Dalet al Dalet, but it's Choshev, it's considered to be a Makom Dalet al Dalet. And that is not, it's to me, it's very interesting. It's not just that your hand is considered to be a Makom of Dalet al Dalet. If you go to page 6, the Gemara says a similar story, although not exactly the same, discussing the following case. Amar Rabba, in the underline, Zorak v'nocha b'fi ha-kelev. Let's say I take something, I pick it up in Rishus HaYachid, and I throw it into Rishus HaRabim. So that too is a violation of Hotzah. Picked it up here and I threw it there. What happens, though, the Gemara says, if I picked it up and I threw it, it's like in the commercials. The dog is running and it lands right in the mouth of the dog. The tennis ball goes right into the mouth of the dog. So am I chayav or not?
Same as the hand.
So the Gemara wants to know. On the one hand, it's not a makom dalet al dalet. The Gemara says a chiddush. Like last underline, kevan dekam mechavein. Since you intend to throw it, that the dog should catch it, not that the dog intercepted it. If the dog intercepted it, it's an interception.
It's
new set of downs. You got to turn it around. Says the Gemara, a rule. Machshavto mashvile makom. And that's what Tosfos here in Dibur Maskil Amar Rava makes the same point. That's the maskana. If you throw something and it lands in the mouth of the dog, or it was Befi Kivshan, it was in the top of the furnace and it got incinerated, but that was your plan. You wanted to incinerate it, which is a separate problem on Shabbos. That's also called Hotza. So you're thinking, why am I bringing this up? Why am I talking about this? But I think, I didn't see this anywhere, you'll take it or leave it, but I think that there is something deep. That Chazal are actually expressing, not just in a halachic sense, but in a very deep and powerful way. And that is that when you talk about a makom, you're speaking about a physical space. But there is something about that that has to do with your yad or with your machshava. That you can have a makom, you can create a makom beyond a physical proximity. And let me explain what I mean by that. There is an amazing essay that Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik has, that he published in a journal called Gesher, Kodesh and Chol, Sacred and Profane. And in the essay, he talks at length about different kinds of Kedusha, and he talks about Kedushas Makom. And he makes a very interesting observation. He says that civilization began, the Jewish people began our history, we began as nomads, as shepherds. And then, with the advancement of civilization, we moved from being nomads to being city dwellers. He says, what's the difference between a nomad and a city dweller? He says, there's a very fundamental difference. A nomad doesn't have a makom. And in a certain sense, that means that he doesn't really have his own strong identity. He doesn't have a sense of belonging. He's almost, and this is an extreme formulation, he's almost a parasite. He's a taker. He's always looking, where's the grass going to be green, and I'll find a place. As opposed to saying, this is my place. This is where I belong. This is where we're going to set down roots. That's the mila of the city dweller. He becomes firmly rooted. He becomes more part of the infrastructure. He's grounded. He's not always flying all over the place. He's not here today and gone tomorrow. It's a more grounded life, living in a city, living in a house, rather than living in a tent, just floating from place to place. So turn the packet over. Soloveitchik says something amazing. He suggests, see at the top left, he says that a person who is a nomad, who has no such personal integration with a world perspective as a nomad, he has no place consciousness, no sense of belongingness, he can have no kedusha. Amazing. Who wants to read Vayter? One may be acquainted. Any volunteers?
I can do it.
All right, thanks, Lisa.
One may be acquainted with many cultures, yet the question is always pertinent. What is my makom, my place? What is my world perspective? For knowledge alone means nothing. The spiritual nomad may have universal knowledge and yet remain cultureless. For he is not experienced with knowledge. Knowledge becomes an integral part of his existence and consciousness through the medium of mental bonds that it may be truly said that the spiritual nomad has come home to a place of his own. The tragedy of many modern Jews today lies in the fact that they are deserting an ancient heritage and, moreover, severing spiritual bonds with values which man admires or worships. They desert the realm of Jewish values but have not acquired new ones. Their tragedy lies not in their dearth of knowledge, for quite to the contrary, modern Jews have much theoretical and practical knowledge. Rather, it lies in the fact that they are lacking in the living experience of values, the passionate merger of the worshiper with the object of his worship. Indifferent knowledge and a skeptical approach to ideals and norms will never result in a multidimensional personality. The modern Jew is a spiritual wanderer, and this spiritual wanderer includes not only the non-pious Jew, but even a certain type of observant Jew. For piety, which is not based on Torah and knowledge, does not constitute the ideal of Jewish religiosity.
Perfect. Thank you. Such an amazing idea.
Can you repeat that?
I'll try to bring that down to our level. And we can look at this really on two planes. A person who has a makom, has a place, has a mooring, their identity. So Rav Soloveitchik is actually saying on a higher level, but I think we could look at it on two planes. The first is that we have to ask ourselves, what is our makom? What are our values? Where are we rooted? A person who doesn't have a strong identity, a strong spiritual foundation, that person doesn't have a makom. It's not, and that's the chiddush of this whole piece that was so eye-opening to me, that makom doesn't just mean a geographic location. It means a place that you come back to spiritually from a values perspective. So makom is, what am I all about? What's my makom? And then what Rav Soloveitchik is saying is even a further place, which is that if you have a makom, then those values become the identity with which you live. They become integrated into your whole existence. And so it's not just some theoretical knowledge, it becomes an experience. Judaism is not just a set of laws that you go through mechanically, it's a whole way of life. So that's why that's the second point. But I think the first point to me is the biggest chiddush, that to have a makom is, where do I belong? And it doesn't mean where do I put myself, right? It means, where do I belong in terms of what is my identity? That's what we're asking ourselves. And I wonder, therefore, if that concept can explain the Gemara's halachic observations in Masechet Shabbos. You need an akira and a hanacha from a makom. So you know what defines your makom? Your hand defines your makom. What you do with your life, where you put your emphasis, what you accomplish, that's your makom. It is. Where we spend our money, that shows us where our makom is. What we invest, what we toil in, that's one way to determine what is our makom. And the other way to determine is your machshava. Machshavto mashvilei makom. If we intend to give that chashivas, so then that's my makom. Whatever I give chashivas to, that is what we're going to call my makom. A person can give chashivas to a lot of different things. That's really what their makom is. And sometimes we give chashivas to something, and then we step back and we're like, you know what, that's not really important. Something else is important. You know, we go through life, we're constantly re-examining, or we should be constantly re-examining, what's our makom? Because we run the risk, Rav Soloveitcher says, it's not that a person is binary. It's either I'm a nomad or I have a makom. You know, this it comes and goes. Sometimes we are like nomads. We lose our makom. We lose our bearing. So we got to come back. We come back to the makom of the makom of the mikdash, the makom of the Beis HaMikdash. But it's really, where is that makom? It's inside. It's what is chashuv to us. It's what do we do with our hands? Where do we spend our money? Where do we spend our time? Where do we invest our physical resources? And what's our machshava? So when we talk about va'asu l'mikdash v'shachanti b'socham, creating a makom for ourselves, it really means creating an identity. What is my identity that I come back to that doesn't just say, well, I'm grazing here today and then I'm grazing there tomorrow? So I saw a beautiful vart. Take a look on the next page from the Halakha Teferes Shlomo of Reb Shlomo HaKohen of Radomsk. He says, Va'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. So he says, why does it say v'shachanti b'socham, I will live among them, in the Jews? Why does it say v'shachanti b'socho, I will live in it, in the Mishkan? You know why? Third line, Yeshlomar dekoy al ikar hashras hashchina. Where is the main resting place of the Shechina? Shahaya al pnimius nidvas libam shel kol echad ve'echad. You know where God really rested? Not in the tabernacle, in the hearts of all the people. The people who made the Mishkan their makom, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested his presence. So he says, the people who were makdishim nidvosim letzorche ha-mishkan, he says, of the people who were totally devoted, to that extent, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that his presence. The people, you know, the people who gave but didn't really contribute, they didn't make that their makom, so it wasn't his makom so much either. You know, people, they wrote a check, okay. But did they really invest? Not so much. So then, to their extent, the Rebbe Shlomo wasn't so invested. But the people who were nidvas libam, the people who really made this their makom, then the Shechina was resting in their heart. So we ask ourselves, what do we do today? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We have, on the one hand, we have a Beis HaKnesses, so we're going to makdish, and we're going to mekadish the Beis HaKnesses. We're going to treat it with sanctity. We're going to think about the special nature of that. But now we also realize that Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to be Shomer Hishchina on the makom that we create for ourselves. To the extent that we create a makom for him, then he's going to rest there. Right? Isn't that the old Kotzker line? Where can you find God? Wherever you let him in. If you make a makom for Hashem, that's what we're going to do. The idea that the Mishkan is some far out ethereal concept is so off the mark, because each one of us, the opportunity for us to create a makom for ourselves by which we measure every decision in our lives, how we spend our time, how we comport ourselves, what are our goals. You know, when we go to sleep at night and think about what really matters to us, what is our makom, that's our makom. That's for our va'asu li mikdash. So you could say, wow, that's a tall task. But don't worry, the Chafetz Chaim comes to the rescue. Let's turn the page. And with this, we'll close. This comes from, there was a Rav Greineman from B'nai Brak, who summarized teachings that he heard from the Chafetz Chaim. So in the beginning of the parsha, the Medrash, the Psikta, says the following. B'sha sha'amra HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe va'asu l'mikdash nizdazeya top left column Moshe. Moshe, he was shaking. He was petrified. Eich yachol ha'odom lasos bayis la'kadosh baruch hu. How is it possible for a person to build a house for God? That's crazy. What it says, hine ha'shamayim v'shmei ha'shamayim lo yichal kalucha. So amrak lo ha'kadosh baruch hu, God says to him, look, lo lefi kochi ani mevakesh. I'm not asking you to build a house to my specs. I am God. You can't build a house to my specs. That's not what I'm asking. Ella lafi kocham. You do what you can. So we're going to put up 20 beams in the south and 20 beams in the north and 8 beams in the west. That's what we'll do. Similarly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, bring karbonos. Moshe Rabbeinu says, animals? How am I going to bring so many animals? It's innumerable. How, you can never do enough for God. The Baruch Hashem says, listen, do me a favor. Don't bring enough for me, just two for you. Bring one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Similarly, turn the page. Ribbono Shel Olam told us, give kofer nafsho. Who can give, says Moshe Rabbeinu? Me, yuchal litein pityo nafsho. Who can do that? Who can give enough sacrifice financially to, so to speak, pay for their soul? It's impossible. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, just give a machzis a shekel. Says the Chavetz Chaim, the Halakha Chavetz Chaim, here in the paragraph on the right side of page 10. Midivrei Chazal Elu, from the words of Chazal, these onu roem we see, ki ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba betrunya in briyosav. God doesn't come with a complaint that we can't do what we can't do. He doesn't ask us to do the impossible. Kol echad mehem mechuyav lasos, rak ma sheyesh bekocho. Whatever we're able to. So he says, fourth line from the bottom of the section, kol echad mechuyav lekvoaz mozman lulma Torah kafi acholto. Everybody's obligated to learn as much as they can. As much as we can. Mi b'mishnayis, somebody who has time to learn mishnayis. And I'm always reminded of this, because to me it was had a big roshim as a child. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, he came from Europe. He had to support, his father was a rav, his brother was in yeshiva, he didn't have any education, so he had to support, he worked in a grocery store, got fired every week till he was stocking shelves, he earned $7 a week in the early 1930s, the Depression. He supported the whole family of seven people. So he never learned how to learn. So what was his thing? He always learned Mishnayos. That was all, till the day he died, that was his biggest thing. Learn Mishnayos and go to shul. He was a shul addict, mamish. Amazing. That was his thing. So the Chavetz Chaim says, when he got to the Ribbono Shel Olam after 120, he didn't say to him, oh, you didn't learn Gemara. You didn't learn Daf Yomi. He says, what for Daf Yomi? It's Tonat Shaya for him. So he would say, who learned Mishnayos? Who learns Halacha? V'chein adin benesina tzedaka. And tzedaka and all these things. Now, sometimes we have to be honest with ourselves. If we can find 4 hours a week for fantasy football or shopping or A, B, and C, and then we say to ourselves, you know, we have no time for learning. I couldn't even learn a half hour shiur because I was so busy. So that's, you know, that's what the Chavetz Chaim is saying. You got to be, you know, in Israel they would say tivchor atzpa, and then you go like this. No, bemet, you know, you had 5 hours for fantasy football. I didn't have any time to do shnai mikra. So, but Baruch Hashem, now fantasy football is over. As of yesterday, now there's going to be like, there's going to be a run on the...
He wants to start a new league.
So it's kefi yecholto. The Chavetz Chaim says kefi yecholto. And I think that's really the takeaway for the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, for the Mikdash that we build for ourselves. It's going to be about the values. Those values are going to dictate how we apportion our time. And not everybody is going to apportion it the same way. But if we have a makom, if everybody's makom is the kedushas makom of the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMikdash internally, it's the machshavto mashvile makom, if the Ribbono Shel Olam is a priority for us, then we'll do, like the Chavetz Chaim says, whatever we can, bein ma'at, bein harbe, whatever it is. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to say, that's where the Hashras HaShechina is going to be. We're going to have a Hashras HaShechina even without a Beis HaMikdash, because it's going to be, like the Holy Tiferet Shlomo says, in us. In every person, if we create that space, if we create that makom. So this time period is a time period for us to perhaps come back, both to thinking about the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses and how we treat the Beis HaKnesses, but also thinking about how we create our own inner makom. How we create a makom that we feel that we are rooted. We're not just flipping, moving from one thing to the next. That ultimately everything always comes back to our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's our machshava. That's machshavto mashvile makom. That's where our hands are. And ultimately that's going to be the focus of our lives. Thank you for hosting. Shkoyach.
Who did you say the third one?
Reb Shlomo Rabinowitz. Reb Shlomo HaKohen of Radomsk. Awesome Hasidic.